This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
Today on Breakfast Grill, we are talking to Jalil Rashid, the Group Chief Executive of Berjaya Corp Berhad. Encik Jalil, a very warm welcome back to the grill with you. Let's begin, obviously, with the restructuring plan that you announced in mid-June, basically last month. It appears that the market has been quite unimpressed with that, right, with that particular plan. I think the key question that investors are asking is, they wanted to know what is core and what is non-core for Berjaya Corp. And obviously, why so few details with that plan?
So initially, when we looked at, when I came in about 5 months ago and looked at the group of companies, we were unable to pinpoint exactly what sector groups that we were really operating in or what was really a core for us. So when we restructured it, the first thing I wanted to do was kind of define the group properly. And it was very apparent that about 90% of our revenue came from consumer-related businesses, which is why at the top, I wanted it to be defined as a consumer group. And underneath that, five verticals: retail, food, hospitality, real estate, and services. And under that, we were very clear that retail would be anything which would have a distribution footprint. Food and beverage is what Berjaya Food is today. Land is a pure play property. And hospitality, we announced also that we want to be a hotel owner rather than a hotel operator, which means that the Berjaya branded hotels would eventually no longer exist, and we would just bring in an international operator to run our hotels. And then under services, the three main parts would be gaming, environment, and digital, which means that when we put all this together, two things: Moto Distribution no longer is core for us. We announced the divestment of the Peugeot business, and we do have some minority stakes in other auto distribution businesses that we are in talks now to dispose of. The other one would be our education business. We've got two colleges in Malaysia that we are talking to partners about divesting. We also have a college in Singapore, Informatics, that we have already started the process of divestment. So those two won't be core, but a lot of the restructuring will also involve kind of streamlining the existing sector group. So a hotel will go through a massive change geographically. We've identified our properties in Seychelles, Sri Lanka, some in Malaysia and Philippines and Vietnam up for sale. And we do want to focus on the luxury segment and put that under a hospitality REIT over time once we divest. The challenge there is that this is not the best of times for hospitality. So although we've been in discussions with many parties, it's not really come through until the final end. We're also conscious that there are some element of legal entity rationalization that we are undertaking. As you know, the Berjaya Corp has somewhat of a convoluted shareholding structure. And in order to do some of this restructuring, we do need to undo that shareholding, which would involve certain transactions to be done, which is market sensitive. So we were unable to kind of share that. But over time, I said that the five sector groups that we have would be separately listed over time. And then B Corp at the top would be purely an investment holding company that would act as an asset allocator.
Okay, so that's a lot to unpack there, Jalil. I guess that what it means is after your disposal of the education and car distribution arms, you are still quite a diversified group. You are still gaming, real estate, hotels, albeit management, and of course your consumer franchises, which is still very diversified and obviously quite opaque to investors who do like streamline-focused businesses. You've also talked about how you want to separately list all those five entities. Obviously, that will go a long way towards reducing your debt and increasing your cash flow, and obviously streamlining the ownership profile. Then you also talked about difficulties with the legal issues with the cross-ownership structures. Presumably that means the nearly 50% you own in Berjaya Sports Toto, which is obviously the big dog in the room, and you haven't discussed it that yet either. Can you clarify some of those issues for us?
Yeah, sure. So if you look at all our listed entities, Berjaya Land is probably the one where a lot of the cross-shareholding issues reside in. Berjaya Land owns Berjaya Sports Toto, which in turn owns Berjaya Philippines, which is listed on the Philippine Stock Exchange, which in turn owns HR Owen, which is our car luxury car distribution company. A lot of investors have said, to your exact point, about there is no clear business that we're buying into when we buy into these entities. So as part of that, the first legal entity rationalization is we are doing it at the B-Land level, which is to perhaps relook at our Philippine entity and whether we can do something with that. The free float there is pretty small as it is right now. And if we can address that and take that off the market even, HR Owen will go directly under E-Corp. And then the next part would be to relook at how Toto is under that. What we are currently doing is to perhaps take out some of the property assets, most of the property assets, and put it under a new entity. And then with a view to then relisting that entity as a pure play real estate over time. So that would mean that we would have clear real estate holding company and then Toto would become a pure gaming entity. At the B-Corp level, we would own these five verticals, but I think for investors who want that sort of clear business lines, those sector groups will then eventually be listed to give that sort of focus and clarity.
Well, you know, Jalil, Tan Sri Vincent Tan's corporate finance team is the stuff of legend. Everybody knows the amount of firepower he's got there in terms of planning his next deals, plural. I couldn't help but notice that you talked about how maybe Berjaya Land might be taken off the market, and then obviously then you've got to unravel all those cross-holdings within that. Will that happen? And I think to what extent, more importantly, has COVID delayed this plan and made it, you know, a little bit less feasible from a valuation perspective?
Well, we currently own about 86% of Berjaya Land. We do need to address the free float issue there. Berjaya Land has been perpetually undervalued for a long period of time, and there's a reason for that. Investors buying into it can't quite pinpoint the value in that company because it's got so many other things in there, and that's something that we would address before the end of the year do all that. Beyond just doing the simple legal entity rationalization, there's other issues that we need to think about because there's some foreign entities in there as well. There's some tax implications that we also need to address. But the timeline that I've given the team is towards the end of the year that this will be addressed. And B-Land would take up the bulk of the legal entity rationalization that we're undertaking within the group.
Okay, so obviously with 86% of land, that doesn't mean there's going to be a lot left over to be having to buy. Obviously, valuations are quite depressed on land as well. But that also entails capital raising or some kind of like capital firepower to take out the remaining 14% of land. The thing is, your debt structure right now, current and long-term, is about 20 billion ringgit. That's quite a lot. How are you going to pay for the privatization of land?
So a lot of our debt is actually consolidated debt, right? It sits at the various entity level. I think in the grand scheme of the number, taking if we were to do something with land, the value there wouldn't be very high. I think the problem in the past from a debt perspective has been that where we have raised the debt, because the companies were not really organized properly under very focused business groups and verticals, a lot of the debts were raised from various entities, and that's made things a lot more complicated. For example, it becomes very difficult for land to raise money sometimes because of their ownership in Toto. Because they're not a pure play real estate entity. So by doing that sort of rationalization, it becomes much more easier. I'm not too concerned about raising money for if we were to do the legal entity rationalization. That's a small amount, but I'm more concerned about future things that we do. For example, if we were to go out there and build another hotel overseas, that would be the more chunkier part of it. But by which time we would have restructured the hospitality entity so that it can then go out on its own and get the funding rather than going it at the B Corp level. Because currently, I feel that there are some entities that could raise their own funding, but it's not being done at that level. It's being done at the group level. And that is part of the whole debt restructuring exercise that we are currently undertaking to see really what are debts that we can keep at the B Corp level and what are debts that can be raised at the entity level. And in order to do that, we need to rationalize the entities. Otherwise, the bankers won't have an idea how focused the group is.
We're talking today to Jalil Rachid, the Group Chief Executive of Berjaya Corp Berhad, the diversified conglomerate that is controlled by Tan Sri Vincent Tan. And of course, we're discussing the restructuring plan that yourself, Jalil, unveiled last month. We'll come back after this and talk about that particular plan in more detail, including what you plan to do with the rest of the assets. BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
Jalil Rachid, the Group Chief Executive of Berjaya Corp Berhad, on the grill this morning, and we are discussing the restructuring plan that was unveiled by Jalil in the middle of June, which is last month. Now, you know, we follow your tweets on Twitter quite avidly, Jalil, and one of the things that's more pertinent to the current situation that you discussed in your account was the fact that cash flow is of paramount importance now, as it is with every business. The thing is, you're planning all these things at a time when COVID and the MCOs have sapped the life out of the economy. And a lot of your consumer franchises are exactly hit by that particular lockdown because nobody can go to your Krispy Kreme shops and very few people can walk into Starbucks and what have you, right?
Yeah.
How are you funding and continuing to pay salaries and maintaining operations now at a time? And obviously, when I see your ninth-month results, your losses have expanded by quite a great deal from a year ago. Mm. A year ago, as at the ninth-month point, you made 310 million ringgit in terms of after-tax profits. This year, it's fallen to 137 million ringgit loss.
I think the biggest cash drain for us is on the hospitality side because, you know, unlike the other divisions, we can't really operate remotely. If it's closed, it's closed. And there's an element of fixed cost that we still need to pump in for all the hotels. That's been quite painful for us. There are some, the staff are all on much more flexible timing and hours. So we've reduced some element of cost there. The food business is doing it's still doing okay. We still have the luxury of delivery and that continues to doing quite well. Retail has been a bit choppy. It's not doing badly, but it could do better. We do rely a lot on walk-ins and impulse buying there. Cash flow is, it's really dragged down by hospitality. We're still in a position that we can fund operations quite okay. But the key question is how long this pandemic will prolong. We have factored in that this would be at least until mid next year, the whole new financial year. And if it prolongs beyond that, then we need to do some serious, we need to probably activate plan B there. I have put a moratorium on CAPEX spending and what we need to do. We've done cost management initiatives as well, where we've reduced our OPEX at least by about 6 to 7 million on a monthly basis. And this involves also salary cuts for all the senior management across the group. And for a lot of the others, they have been placed either on 3 or 4 days a week, especially those who are in the service sector. So that's about 7 million shaved off monthly. And we continue prioritizing the spend. So we're okay. Is it great? No, but I don't think we're in a unique situation. I think we just have to soldier on for the next 12 months.
Yeah, middle of next year, by way of target, it does seem pessimistic. Pessimistic because you're planning for the worst, presumably, Jalil, and I think that's prudent. Well, I mean, just in terms of where it's going, in terms of Malaysia's vaccination rollout, in terms of the variants, and in terms of just the re-emergence of clusters all over the world, how do you, just in terms of management headspace, right, how are you dealing with this on a daily basis? Because it must be doing your head in.
Yeah. So this is, I tell people, this is probably the toughest role I've taken on, also given the timing situation when you take over this sort of position during a pandemic. But, you know, I'm of the view, and I've been very vocal about this publicly and again with policymakers, is that, you know, lockdown is not the solution to things. We do need to live with this pandemic as an endemic, you know, pretty much like what Singapore is doing, that we need to reopen the economy slowly. The vaccination rates now are past 400,000 a day. So if that continues, then we should be in a good spot by the end of the year. But, you know, we need to not then keep on closing every time cases go up high. I'm not belittling the whole the virus, but we have gone 1.5 years with this, and we need to move on. And the cost of closing the economy is far more expensive longer term, because there's a lot of unemployment. We see this in our malls where tenants come, and despite the rental waivers that we have given, they are coming to us and saying, we are giving up our space, and please waive our penalty for early termination because we don't have enough working capital. We're seeing this daily in our business. So, you know, this needs to be addressed longer term. I think for me, that's the bigger headache. You know, restructuring the business is probably the easy thing, but the uncertainty of timing of when this thing would come back to normalcy, that's what bothers me.
Jalil Rashid, the Group Chief Executive of Berjaya Corp Berhad, on the grill with us, and we're discussing his restructuring plan for the conglomerate. Now, the elephant in the room, obviously, Jalil, is what are you going to do with Toto, right? Berjaya Sports Toto. That's your cash cow. That's the gaming business. Mm. At the best of times, they can be an amazing business, not just in terms of yields and margins, but also, you know, dividends to the mothership. I mean, to the extent that you can, what are you going to do with that? Are you going to keep it? Are you going to try and get rid of it? I mean, what's the thinking at this point in time?
I want B Corp to morph into an ESG compliant company. So if you using that argument, obviously Toto does stand out. And I think over time as well, from a strategic point of view, I do want businesses where we're a bit more consumer focused and not really in regulated entities. You know, that's a business that, you're right, has been a big source of dividends for us, for the group. But it's over time, the business environment has gotten a lot more trickier simply because the competitors in that space are not really legal operators. So, you know, I've been very pragmatic. I say that every business is available for sale at the right price. We will look at it. It's something that we will look at. We definitely would want the group to morph into a consumer group, into a ESG compliant group over the next 5 years. Toto will be something we'll be re-looking at.
Well, two questions, Jalil. How does a gaming business, which is obviously not the most halal of businesses, morph into an environmental stroke social stroke governance company? And I think secondly, perhaps more pertinently in these weak market times, who can afford to buy Toto? Other than maybe Ananda Krishnan?
Well, I think for the first one is that, you know, I want B Corp to morph into an ESG compliant company. So that means the companies that we own should be ESG compliant. And that's something I've given over a 5-year period. So that's probably the timeline that we have to kind of look at what we want to do with Toto. Secondly, who's going to buy? I have some names, but it's you're right. It's not really going to attract 300 people through the door, but it's definitely very attractive for those who want that because there is a steady cash flow business as well. You know, to be fair, I'm not in a rush. I want to restructure the companies that we have, and I've said I want to put a dividend policy for each of our business groups, our sector groups. So that B Corp would have a much more recurring income in terms of dividend. And once we have that balance of dividends coming in, and we are not over-reliant on the total side, then there's something that we can think about.
Well, it does seem as if right now, at this point in time, your headspace is more towards leaning towards a sale of Toto rather than retaining Toto, not least of which is the difficulty of ensuring that a gaming company is ESG reliant. You've given yourself a 5-year timeline to raise, I think, a total 5 billion ringgit, and I think 2 billion ringgit within 2 years, within 2023. Where else is that going to come from? Because you've also got a whole clutch of listed entities, Jai Food, 58%, Riton, 52 and a bit, Adlan Holdings, 24.5%. Then you've got Philippines land and assets as well. Obviously, Bajaj land we've talked about with 88%. Yeah.
So, you know, the bulk of that 2 billion over the first 2 years would come from selling some of the hospitality assets that we have overseas. That, I reckon, in a conservative manner, should raise us about a billion, slightly over a billion ringgit. We also have some minority stake in financial holdings as well.
Inter-Pacific Securities, would you get rid of that as well?
Well, for a good price, we would. We do have a minority stake in Berjaya Sompo. We also have a minority stake in Chai Lease, which is a finance leasing company. And that too, we're quite optimistic that it would raise about a billion ringgit cumulatively.
Okay.
That stake.
So if Inter-Pacific will be on the block, chances are, and we know that the days of traditional broking are over, and the days of zero, free commissions are here, a la Robin Hood. Are you preparing Inter-Pacific Securities for that day, so that obviously valuations will be better than before?
Yeah. So a lot of the investments that Interpac has put in is on the technology side of it. They're quite lean from a people perspective. They're profitable entities. And we're investing more in technology. And like I said, I think we're even open to partners coming in and taking a strategic stake and sharing that capex burden on us. And we can ride through that. I think one of the bigger mistakes that we have done over the years is our insistence to do everything ourselves and not really involve any strategic partner. And I think that thinking has changed now. We were happy to consider someone coming in, buying a majority stake, and we can ride through it. But when we sat down with the team, I insisted that the strategic priorities need to be very tech and digital centric.
Well, just as a little aside, Tan Sri Vincent Tan, who has been accumulating these assets quite lovingly over the past 10, 20, 30 years, just in terms of a mentality, just in terms of a cultural viewpoint, it might be difficult for him to be saying okay to approve the offloading of these assets, because you come in from a professional manager perspective and you are just pure, dollars and cents. It can be quite cold, and Vincent can be sometimes, maybe he's not cold, you know what I mean? How do you deal with that?
Yeah, so I think, when we had a chat about this, Tanshi was very honest and forthcoming. He says, I'm an entrepreneur and I've accumulated assets. And I've never really been a manager. And that's where I come in. But I know when we looked at every business, the first thing I asked is, what do you want? What do you want to achieve in this group, right? We do want to get away from regulated businesses. We want to be in businesses where we can grow the business without any sort of, industry-imposed tariffs or pricing or that sort of thing. So which means things like retail and food and hospitality and all that makes absolute sense for us. But it is a process, and we've got a lot to uncover. So it's really been a priority. So when you talk about, say, financial services, it's still profitable for us. So in the list of priority, it's probably somewhere in the middle. But would I get there? Yes, I would. But I think it's really, in this job, I think the most important thing is to remain focused, because when you lift the hood, it's easy to get overwrought by the amount of things going under. That, the tendency is just to shut it and just move on. So that's why we've really kind of pinpointed on a few key things that will move the needle for us.
Okay. We're talking this morning to Jalil Rashid, the Group Chief Executive of Berjaya Corp Berhad, and come back after the news and discuss the remaining bits and pieces of the restructuring plan that we haven't talked about, and maybe get into some management headspace and personal discussions with you on tenure at Berjaya. BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
Jalil Rashid, the Group Chief Executive of Berjaya Corp Berhad, on the grill with us this morning. Now, just in terms of potential other options of fundraising, Jalil, I mean, Causeway has been discussed as a potential, in fact, most likely entity to be listed. What do you think about that?
So before we even discuss about Causeway being listed, I think there is a rationalization that's currently undergoing right now. Causeway over the years has expanded too much geographically outside of Malaysia. And from a management perspective, I think a lot of airtime has been spent firefighting and trying to keep these overseas operations going rather than to focus on the core market, which is Malaysia. So over the last few months, I've instructed all the overseas operations to be closed. China is currently undergoing a closure process, and we will complete that by the end of the year, which would allow the management to focus purely on Malaysia. It is in a nice space because it's in the mid-tier of the MLM, so where we don't really have a lot of competition. I think the problem has been that in terms of 100% of management airtime, we've not really spent there. It's been really spent overseas. Could that be an option later on to list? Yes, but I think we need to address the overseas operations first. So I reckon that is probably a process about maybe at the very least 18 months away from now.
Okay, and then there's other points of view in the market which says that, obviously Berjaya Corp is a bit of a real estate play as well, and you've got, you know, huge tracts of land. And some of the more common names that come into the play are, like, for example, Club Darul Ehsan is one of them, I think, KDE. Yes, yeah. And then you've got Bukit Kara Club, prime land. And then I think the developers have been trying to, build on the land for a long time, much to the chagrin of the neighbourhood and the environmental groups. What is the plan with those two assets?
Yeah, so currently those prime land, if you look at Bukit Jalil, Club Darul Ehsan and Bukit Kiara, they are currently being used for recreational club purposes. Under hospitality, I never mentioned recreational clubs. That's because I think over time we want to exit the recreational club space. There's no economics there, but it does sit on prime real estate. We have spent this, I guess it's downtime during this pandemic, to kind of work on procuring the necessary building plans and approvals and doing all that, and to prepare for those lands to be redeveloped. We've got large tracts there, which would be worth quite a bit. We do have in our mind what the GDV will look like, and that would be all housed under the property division.
And since obviously, Jalan, sorry to interrupt you, but since we're sitting here in Tamantun and a lot of the Tamantun residents are vehement objectors of the development of Bukit Kara land, what can they feasibly expect, from someone like you who does believe in ESG and who does believe in the environment?
So if you look at where the club is right now, that is where it would be redeveloped. So it's not encroaching into any space that is the part of the forest reserve. So that's not, where the equestrian club is right now, that is where it will be redeveloped, but it's a low density development. We've thought about what we want to do there properly, and we've changed the plans many, many times. So it will blend in nicely, and it will be low density, but it won't encroach any forest space. So I think that will be very responsible there with all the developments that we have, including KDE and potentially Bukit Jalil in the longer term as well.
And will that include the trails as well? Obviously, a lot of people use those trails. Would you be encroaching on that particular?
No. Whatever that is, what is being used for the public, we would keep it. We would work around it. That's my brief to the team, that we have to work around it. Low density. We have thought about every possible opportunity and possibility of how traffic would go in and out, and people, what sort of development, how dense it should be. The clubhouse would be kept there and renovated to support the overall development. But it won't happen anytime soon. The property market is also quite weak now, so I think we'll take our time there.
Then just in terms of how you want to structure Berjaya Corp in the very long term, obviously yourself at OpCo, you see yourself as a bit of a, I guess like a kind of like like a management office, and then you've got all your listed entities below you in verticals, separately listed with separate public shareholdings as well. A little bit like Berkshire, maybe, a little bit like PNB, maybe, a little bit like Khazanah, maybe.
Yeah.
But just in terms of the culture at Berjaya Corp, you know, it's been run like a fiefdom for a number of years. And it's a very family-oriented business. Naren's in there, his daughter, she's on the board. Robin's still in there. I think he's still on the board. Dato, obviously, to me. How do you traverse that particular journey?
Okay. So I think the family, Naren and Dr. Robin, they've been very supportive. You know, they helped me a lot in the first 2 months during my transition period. If people recall, when I was first appointed, we put through an exco to kind of help me with the transition. And they've been very honest and transparent about, you know, why certain things were done, why certain things were not done, to give me a good idea. And I've been given that space to kind of do what I need to do in terms of restructuring. In terms of, you know, how B Corp will look like in the future is that it will be purely an investment holding company. I think the problem right now, if you look at B Corp, it's a bit confusing because at one point we do strategic work, but on the other point, we also do very operational and administrative work. So one of the things that we're working on from a people perspective is to move a lot of the operational and administrative roles down to the operating companies. And then these companies, we're also working on a corporate scorecard for each of these companies to have their KPIs and proper thing. And a lot of things in the past were driven down by B Corp. Like, for example, you wanted to cut costs. An instruction would come right at the B Corp to just blanket cut costs everywhere. But I want to work in a way where I have given a cost-reducing initiative to each of those entities and let them work within those parameters and framework. And that's what we have done. And by perhaps in the next 2 months or so, we should have come up with a corporate scorecard for each of the entities and an individual KPIs for all the senior management. And then that would be monitored on a monthly basis by my office, and then will be reported to the board on a quarterly basis. So yes, a bit of culture change required. I don't think it's starting from zero. All the companies already have their own KPIs. I think our biggest issue in the past has been the performance monitoring. You know, we have the KPIs, but, you know, someone needs to kind of monitor and then say, hey, you know, you're on track, you're not on track, you know. I think there was always that KPI, but there was no stick and carrot given towards it. So that's what's changing.
And even all through this, lastly, Jalil, you had famously bought a considerable amount of stock in Berjaya Corp. And we did discuss this, you know, obviously in the past interactions as well. You have kept buying, you have maintained your buying. And I think your last filing was on the 5th of July. And your current holding now sits at 187 million shares. You have a 3.65% interest in the business. That's quite considerable. It's cost you nearly 60 million ringgit at current levels. Just in the context of, you know, making this happen from your perspective, which is a huge roll of the dice personally, right? And working within the confines of a family holding structure where, you know, you've got all the detritus and the you know, the cultural values that have come from a family ownership structure. You know, just in terms of staying the course, how have you felt about, you know, accumulating this interest in the business? I guess a few months into the job, what are your reflections for people who are questioning your interest in this? In fact, your personal interest?
Yeah. So I think when I took on this job, I always said that I wanted to have skin in the game and I wanted to be a shareholder CEO rather than just an employee CEO. So the accumulation of the shares was a combination of equity and leverage as well. But it was also to kind of tell investors that if the share price goes down, I feel it more. You know, personally, I'm a 4% shareholder. And I've been very consistent. I've not sold anything. I've been buying more during the share weakness. I think the group is undervalued. I spend a lot of time looking at what it's worth. And I think because the sheer number of businesses, we've only scraped the surface and not really done anything. I always say that if you draw a straight line, we've always kind of just cruising along, rather than us outperforming in any part of the business. And that's the motivation for me personally, from challenge aside, but also financially, that, you know, if this works well, it'll work very well for me as well.
So I'm sure you've done your numbers. This is the last question, truly, honestly, Jalil. Your plan says that you want to become a consumer group in five sectors within 5 years. You want to halve your debt to 2.5 billion within 3 years of that. You want to divest as much as 5 billion ringgits of assets within the next 5 years. And you want to have dividends coming from all five entities within that time span. Today is 26 cents. What can it be if all goes well and the sky remains blue? Within, say, 5 years, at the culmination of a plan, where can it be?
Well, if you do a sum of the parts evaluation of the group right now, just taking all the listed entities that we have and just, you know, doing some geeky mathematical work on it, it should be at about 80 cents, right? You know, that's the sum of the parts.
And that's business. Today?
That's today. That's what it is today. That doesn't reflect about what it could be further. The biggest value trap is obviously in the land, in the property, given that we accumulated all this land at a very low price, 20, 25 years ago. So we do have a number. We do have a number. I don't want to share it, but, you know, it severely, severely undervalues the business if you take that number.
Between 5 and 10 ringgit?
Yes.
But no more than?
I would say closer to about 10.
Okay, well, thank you. It was a huge pleasure and a privilege talking to you. Candid as always, Jalil, and very well prepared. Thank you very much for your time. We were talking to Jalil Rashid, the Group Chief Executive of Berjaya Corp. Berhad, BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U-Mobile. Unleashing unlimited potential every day.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.